On a cold Manchester evening in 1903, a group of women gathered in a modest terraced house at 62 Nelson Street. They had no army, no treasury, no political power. What they did have was fury, a burning frustration with decades of polite petitioning that had achieved nothing. That night, Emmeline Pankhurst and her small circle founded the Women's Social and Political Union with a motto that would shake the British establishment to its core: deeds, not words. Within a decade, these women would be force-fed through tubes, imprisoned, beaten by police, and reviled by much of society. Some would die for their cause. Yet they persisted, creating what became one of history's most audacious political movements. Their story isn't just about winning the vote. It's about what happens when patience runs out and ordinary people decide they'd rather risk everything than accept injustice for one more day. For 70 years, women played by the rules and failed. In 1832, when the Great Reform Act defined voters as male persons, Mary Smith petitioned Parliament, arguing that tax-paying women deserved representation. Parliament dismissed her. This pattern repeated for generations. Organizations formed, petitions circulated, bills were introduced almost yearly. All failed. Meanwhile, women in Wyoming, Colorado, New Zealand, and Australia gained voting rights, making Britain's obstinacy absurd. A question haunted the movement. What if power only responds to disruption? Emmeline Pankhurst had watched this feudal cycle her entire life. October 1905 marked the transformation. At Manchester's Free Trade Hall, Christabel Pankhurst and millworker Annie Kenney asked liberal politicians, "Would you support women's suffrage?" Ignored, they unfurled a Votes for Women banner. Police dragged them out. Christabel deliberately assaulted a policeman, forcing her arrest. Both refused to pay fines and went to Stringway's prison. This calculated civil disobedience announced a new era. Annie Kenney later reflected, "The old life had gone, a new life had come." The Daily Mail coined suffragette as an insult. The WSPU proudly adopted it with a hard G. They would get the vote. The movement developed innovative tactics. Members disguised themselves to infiltrate meetings, with Annie Kenney posing as a wealthy lady while Minnie Baldock pretended to be her maid. Each arrest generated publicity. Each prison sentence created martyrs. Each act of defiance inspired more women to join. The WSPU understood what modern activists still grapple with: spectacle matters. When Prime Minister Asquith demanded demonstrable public support in 1908, they organized Women's Sunday for Hyde Park. Emmeline Pethick Lawrence introduced the iconic color scheme: purple for dignity, white for purity, green for hope. Flora General Drummond led the procession on horseback in military uniform. Seven processions converged on June 21st. Estimates ranged from 250,000 to 750,000 attendees. Yet, Asquith sent only a dismissive reply. Even overwhelming public support wouldn't move the government. Militancy would have to escalate. Following Women's Sunday, the WSPU escalated dramatically. In June 1908, Mary Lee and Edith New became the first suffragettes to deliberately break windows at the Prime Minister's residence. Upon arrest, Edith declared, "Freedom for the women of England, we are martyrs." After 2 months of hard labor, they were celebrated with brass bands and suffragettes pulling their wagon through the streets. The movement drew entire families. The five Spung sisters all became active suffragettes: a nurse arrested multiple times, a teacher in Africa, a portrait artist, a weaver, and a soprano giving fundraising concerts. Charlotte "Charlie" Marsh became a standard bearer in processions. May Billinghurst, paralyzed from the waist down, campaigned vigorously using her hand-powered tricycle. Police would later overturn it during protests. Yet opposition arose from unexpected quarters. The National Women's Anti-Suffrage League formed in 1908, led by novelist Mrs. Humphrey Ward, warning that women's suffrage would bring disaster upon England. Even accomplished women like explorer Gertrude Bell believed women lacked political experience. The suffragettes weren't just fighting male politicians, they were battling deeply entrenched beliefs about women's proper place.
The year 1910 brought devastating betrayal. A conciliation bill supporting women's suffrage passed its second reading, and the WSPU suspended militant tactics. Then, on November 18th, Black Friday, Prime Minister Asquith dissolved Parliament without mentioning the bill. Mrs. Pankhurst led 300 women to Parliament Square. When Asquith refused to meet them, 6 hours of unprecedented brutality followed. About 150 women were physically assaulted, 29 sexually molested. Women were thrown down, beaten, groped, and dragged into side streets. Henria Williams testified police grabbed her heart. She wore no corsets, making the assault more painful. Frank Whitty rescued her from blows, kicks, and insults and prevented her from falling under horses' hooves. The Daily Mirror published a damning photograph of Ada Wright sprawled face down after being struck by police. The government ordered it suppressed and the negative destroyed. Black Friday fundamentally changed the movement. Some women refused further deputations, while others embraced stone-throwing and window-breaking that would lead to immediate arrest rather than prolonged abuse. In January 1911, Henria Williams died of angina, her death attributed to Black Friday. Her brother wrote she had knowingly and willingly shortened her days in rendering services to the womanhood of the nation. The government's brutality had created its first martyr. By 1912, patience had evaporated. On March 1st, Emmeline Pankhurst and companions broke windows at 10 Downing Street. Within hours, 150 suffragettes systematically smashed windows across London's commercial districts, causing 5,000 in damage. Streets descended into chaos as shopkeepers erected shutters and any unaccompanied woman with a handbag became suspect. In prison, suffragettes faced force-feeding, a brutal procedure where women were pinned down while doctors inserted tubes through their nostrils or mouths. Mary Lee described it as most painful. The drums of the ears seemed to be bursting, a horrible pain in the throat and breast. 118 medical practitioners condemned it as inhumane. Two journalists resigned from the Liberal Daily News, declaring, "We cannot denounce torture in Russia and support it in England." The escalation continued. Emily Davison set fire to pillar boxes. Mary Richardson attacked Velazquez's The Rokeby Venus with a hidden axe, protesting the government's treatment of Mrs. Pankhurst. Then came August 3, 1914. Britain declared war on Germany. Mrs. Pankhurst suspended the campaign, noting that militancy was rendered less effective by contrast with the infinitely greater violence of war. On February 6, 1918, the Representation of the People Act granted votes to women over 30. Full equality came in 1928. These women risked everything, their bodies, freedom, sometimes their lives. They endured force-feeding until their eardrums felt like bursting, sexual assault by police in broad daylight, and watched friends die from protest injuries. Yet they persisted. Their story proves fundamental rights are never granted. They're won through sacrifice by people who refuse to accept injustice as inevitable. The suffragettes pioneered tactics activists still use today: hunger strikes, property destruction as political statement, visual spectacle to capture media attention, and cross-class coalitions. They proved that when institutional channels fail, disruption becomes necessary. Their purple, white, and green colors remain global symbols of women's political struggle. Their greatest legacy? Demonstrating that ordinary people, mill workers, nurses, teachers, mothers, possess extraordinary power when they organize and refuse silence, embracing deeds, not words. The vote you cast today, if you're a woman, was won by women who went to prison, were brutalized, and risked everything for your voice in governance. That's not ancient history. That's a gift purchased with suffering within living memory. Honor it. Use it. Defend it. Because the suffragettes taught us freedom isn't free, and rights undefended are rights soon lost.